Welcome to the junior year, episode 25 of the Horror Podclass. My name is Tyler, and I am the editor-in-chief here at Signal Horizon, which is a magazine dedicated to exploring horror in and out of the classroom. So when I'm not the managing editor here at Signal Horizon, I'm a teacher at a local high school here in Kansas City, Missouri. And tonight, I'm joined by my co-host and monster ambassador here at Signal Horizon, as I am every night that we host the Horror Podclass. It's the award-winning writer, Oren Gray.
Hey there.
Hey, man. So today, we're going to take some time to talk about what we have watched lately, what we've read lately. We will then explore some free horror on the internet, and we are going to finish tonight's episode with an in-depth discussion of the Shudder exclusive movie, Haunt. So before we get to talking about commercial haunts and the movie Haunt, what's going on, Oren? What have you watched lately? What's got you excited?
So the last thing I watched was this 1989 anthology movie called Terror Eyes, two separate words.
Okay.
It was made by the same people who made Soul Taker, which was featured on Mystery Science Theater 3000, so it'll give you an idea of the level of quality it was. But no, it was a delight. it was amazing.
Okay.
And the great thing about it, though, is that I watched it at Analog Sunday, which we live streamed for the first time because we can't all go to the Screenland. So yeah. that was nice. It was not a substitute for actually going, but it was the next best thing.
Fair. So talk to me a little bit. I have so many questions when it comes to this entry, but let's first off start with the process. Like, what did they use to live stream? What is that like? What did that whole setup look like?
So they used, I think it's just called Cast with a K.
Okay.
And like, it can have multiple screens going at once, but they just had the one. And so it was just like, there's just a chat window down one side. I did it in web. Like, you can download an app too, but I just did it as a browser extension.
Okay.
But like, it was just the screen in the middle and then like a chat window in the side. And so we were all just like typing into the chat window, you know, saying hi to one another and stuff, and then running the movie. And like, no one had mics on or anything. So it was just movie sound coming through. They had some technical issues getting it started, so it didn't start until a little bit late, but you know, that often happens in person at Analog Sunday. So, you know, it was keeping with the theme.
That's awesome. So you can broadcast the movie though, right? You can live stream that movie to everyone.
They did. Yeah. Eli, as far as I know, he just like played the tape and somehow streamed from the tape. And actually it was the Screenland Armor's like account that was streaming it. So I don't know if they had actually like physically put the tape in the VCR at the Screenland or what, but
interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, they streamed the movie and we watched it.
Okay. And you said it was an anthology. Yeah.
Yeah. Sort of. Yeah. I mean, yes, it absolutely was, but it was a weird mess of one.
Oh, okay. What, was there like connective tissue? What was the,
That was the really weird thing, was that, like, it felt like someone telling a story, right? But as they're telling it, they keep changing their mind about how they want to tell it, so they just, like, veer a different direction mid-story.
Cool.
So,
okay.
Like, the framing story is itself, like, four vignettes, because it keeps changing how it's going to frame the story. So, like, the first one is a nightmare someone has. And then, like, the second segment is maybe, I don't remember if it's another nightmare or if it's, like, her trying to write down a nightmare she had or something. And then they go camping, and so then they're telling stories around the campfire, but then that stops, and then it's a different thing. And so, like, the framing story is, like, four different framing stories.
Okay, all right.
It was quite a thing.
Okay, so it evolves along with the different vignettes.
Sure, evolves, that's a word for it.
Hey man, I'm trying to give it something. So, worth checking out?
It was great, it was great fun.
Okay. I love that. So now would be a good time. If you want to be supportive of things like Analog Sunday, then you should totally navigate on over, and I'll stick the link in the show notes here in case you're interested. Screenland Armor is our local theater that we talk a lot about, and they have a Patreon now where you can share these experiences with us, with Eli, who runs Analog Sunday, and all the other great guys that contribute to pretty wonderful programming that Screenland Armor is up to.
Yeah, they've been doing tons of stuff, too. I've only caught a fraction of it so far, but they've been doing lots of stuff.
Yeah, I feel real bad. You know,
I know they're going to be showing Tragedy Girls, I think, soon. Maybe they just did. I can't remember. If they haven't already, they're going to, and I want to see that.
Yes, I think they will also have the director doing a Q&A afterwards. I think it is going to show the day that this comes out. So as long as I pushed this out early in the day, then you ought to be able to catch it. But I loved Tragedy Girls. It's a high school horror film, which you know is my bag. It's really creative in how it deconstructs like typical slasher tropes, and its use of social media is fucking rad and interesting, and it has a lot to say. So
yeah, I really wanted to catch it when it was playing at the Screenland, I think, at one point in the past, but I was sick or something, I missed it. So
yeah, it's totally worth checking out if you haven't seen it. We could do a whole episode, I think, on that. It's pretty rad. Okay, so here's what I am checking out. Number one, I just caught the new Penny Dreadful. It's called Penny Dreadful: City of Angels, and it shares nothing in common with the old Penny Dreadful. Like, literally nothing. Not a single character, not a single idea, which I was kind of bummed about, because by the end of that show, I was so in, and it, you know, it's got all these kind of classic movie monsters.
I only saw the first season. Was it good the whole time?
Yeah, I think so. Okay. Like, it was
I liked the first season, so.
And I think the characters are memorable. It's, I think it's got a lot of kind of classic genre actors in it that give it some oomph, but it was very niche, you know, like it was a very specific thing. This is also a very specific thing, and one I'm going to reserve judgment on. Anybody can check out the first episode. It's available for free on YouTube, and my wife loved it because she's a Spanish teacher, and it's got a lot of like Chicano and Latino iconography. Mm-hmm. So, like, the first episode is called Santa Muerte, and a lot of it is about, you know, the duality between the bad person who's named Magda and the good person who appears to be Santa Muerte. So, yeah, it's interesting. I'm cautiously waiting episode two to see what they do with it.
I really wish, and it does not sound like this is what they're doing, but I kind of hope it is still, that they were like, that they were just doing, you know, Penny Dreadful again, except with like characters from 1930s stories or whenever it's set.
Yes.
But the characters from 1930s stories are less immediately recognizable than those, so I don't know what they'll do with that. I'm curious to see how that plays out, because like,
so, I hate to be the bearer of bad news. It has it does nothing with classic movie monsters. You know, like you get these really cool characters in the original version, and exploring those characters is part of the fun.
Right.
This is much more into the mythology of the West, specifically of the Southwest, which I don't inherently dislike, but you know, especially with such an affinity for classic Hollywood movie monsters.
Right. Yeah. And there's so much you could do with like with 30s iconography and characters or whatever it's set. I don't even know what it's set.
1938.
Okay. So. Yeah. So 30s then, with the stuff that was going on in Hollywood at that time and everything. The same way you did with the Gothic stuff in the original one. I would just be like, I really want that, because no one does that. Like people reimagine like the Victorian era stuff all the time, but no one does like the pulp stuff the same way.
Yeah.
And I would be interested to see that, but it does not sound like that's the direction they're going. But who knows? They were pretty coy. They were pretty coy with the first season of the original too. Like they kept a lot of stuff. They kept a lot of stuff in their back pocket. So we'll see.
That's true. And they could pivot. It's like the original. And again, let me just preface everything by saying, I love a good political horror movie, right? Or political horror show or whatever. So it's not that I'm like dismissive of that particular trajectory, but this show has Nazis, and like, in fact, one of the Nazis says, and I understand it was a term of art back in the 1930s too, but he's like, we should have America first, and you know, let the Nazis do whatever they want to, and maybe if it works we can do that here, you know, like it's it's all a little it wears its politics on its sleeve, and it is very on the nose and doesn't have nearly the kind of whimsy and funness, if that's a thing, that the original had. I was very, it's very serious. So I was like, oh shit. All right. Hmm. Okay. Yeah. That it was more or less my general opinion after the first episode was done. I will also mention the first 5 minutes have perhaps the worst fire CGI I have ever fucking seen. It's like god awful.
So have you seen The Dead Hate the Living?
I have not. I don't think.
Okay, so then probably not worse than that. It's like, if it was worse than that, I have to go see it right now.
Yeah, it's and here's the thing. It's like the first big, like, spectacular thing in. Like,
I don't know why people keep CGIing fire when they can't do it. Like, so many people are bad at it.
Yeah, and it's like, that's the first big moment of this series, and it's like, woof, yikes.
And it's not like fire's not a real thing that we can just make.
Right, right. Like, essentially, it is the bad person lighting a field on fire. I'm like, are you trying to tell me that you couldn't find a real fucking field to light on fire? Come on. You know, like, yes, obviously people have to burn up, but also we could still do that. You know, like, you can stick a guy in a fire suit and light his ass on fire. Call it good.
Yeah, we've been doing it for years.
Yeah, and I think you coupled that. It comes on the same night that Westworld does. And while Westworld's plot this season is a goddamn fucking mess, it's got some really rad CGI. So... And like, it does that really well, and it couples it with really cool practical effects. So, it's not a great juxtaposition. So, let me just leave Penny Dreadful at cautiously optimistic. But let's move on to something that I think is fan-fucking-tastic, and that's Blood Quantum, which dropped. We're recording on a Tuesday, and it dropped like at midnight last night, and it's fantastic. It is an indigenous horror film. It is an indigenous zombie horror film. So it's like, yes, everything that I want.
and that's on Shudder, right? You said?
Yeah. So you can get a free 30 days either by using the shut-in promo code. Or if that doesn't work, you can use our promo code, which is Signal. So either one should get you 30 days. And... Let me just tell you the premise. The premise is everybody can become a zombie, okay, if they get bit, except for Native Americans, and there's something in their blood or in their DNA that prevents the disease from spreading to them. So reservations become these, like, huge beacons of humanity, and the bulk of the movie is essentially, like, what do we do with all of these white invaders that are trying to, find salvation in these areas that they have typically avoided. It's so good.
I was sad to miss it at Panic Fest, but I just, like, timing never worked out, so I am excited.
Yeah, and I think it was at Brooklyn Horror Festival, and then before then I think it might have even been at TIFF, so it had its full run of the festival circuit for sure. And I would put it into the canon of mutilated penises. There were so many mutilated penises at Panic Fest this year. And spoiler alert, Blood Quantum has one of them. And it's
well, if it's only one, then at least it's not, you know, porno. Porno had like two or three.
So, that's true. That's true.
You know.
Like, that's
as,
our new...
I mean,
that's
as our, as one might expect from a movie called Porno, I guess, but...
Yeah. That's going to be our new ranking system. We're going to say, like, I'll give that 1 out of 4 mutilated penises. Let the audience determine what to do with that.
What that means.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Whether that's, like, whether the scale gets better or worse.
Yeah, goes. Right. Right, and it will entirely depend on the person, right? Like, you might only look for the 4 out of 4 mutilated penises, you know? Like Antichrist, right? You'd be like, oh, shit, I gotta totally check that thing out.
You might have still never seen all of that movie.
Oh, oof.
I've written about it enough times by now that, like, you'd think I would have, but I've only seen parts. I think I've seen all of the, like, shocking parts and none of the connective tissue.
Yeah.
Because I've had to write about it, so I've, like, watched just clips of the, like, here's the mutilation scene, and here's the other mutilation scene, and here's the this, and so that's all I've seen.
Yeah.
So it's just a bunch of people hitting penises with rocks, and no story in my head.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I think if you put us together, we would be able to tell you what the film was about. Because I have only fast-forwarded through those, you know... The first time I saw, like, a nail go through a wiener, I was like, yeah, this is not going to be my bag. You know, like, I think I'm going to sit this scene out. So let's get
now,
forward.
I had to watch those scenes a few times because, like, I'll get hired to write, like, a most shocking movies that are on Netflix or whatever. And
if it is,
I don't know, whatever. But, you know, things like that. And so, like, I'll have to credibly write about why it's so shocking, and so I'll go find the shocking scenes and watch those, and it's like, well, shit.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, now my whole night is ruined. Awesome. Great. Yeah. Yeah, dude, I mean, it's some people's bags, but it's definitely not mine, so. Okay, well, let's move on to the dark corner of the web. Something free that we can check out. And you set me up with the dark corner of the web this week. Would you like to kind of intro and describe it for us?
Sure. So this week's Dark Corner of the Web is a story called The Pine Arch Collection by Michael Wayhunt. And it's on The Dark magazine for free, which I think the last week's was too. So we're really repping The Dark here right now. But I meant to, like, what I wanted to do was to have this week's be October Film Haunt. Which is another story by him, which I thought would go really well with what we're talking about this week. But I couldn't find it online. So I found this one online, which is, like, essentially... I don't know if they're like... They're not sequels. They're parallel stories, I guess. So they both reference... Like, this one references events that happen in that one, but they, like, aren't one after the other or anything.
Okay.
I went with it. But, like, I feel like it has a lot of, like... It's not, you know, specifically about haunted houses. It's about, like, found footage stuff, which today's movie's not, actually. But I feel like it kind of feels like a haunted house, so I thought it worked for the evening.
Yeah, can you maybe give us, like, the you know, 10 or 15 second description of what the story is about?
Yeah, so it's an epistolary story, which is told through emails. So,
okay.
Like, the whole thing is just emails. And, like, it starts out with this unsolicited email that gets to this girl asking her to make a film for this sort of found footage anthology, essentially, that's the Pine Arch Collection. And, but the email's creepy. Like, it includes a video, like, that shows her house, and it knows her name and stuff, and, like, it's this kind of creepy email that she gets, and so she gets kind of obsessed with it, and... trying to figure out what it is and trying to maybe make, you know, a film to go in this thing, and it snowballs into really uncanny, weird, bad stuff from there.
All right. Nah, I think that sounds good. Any kind of found footage is going to find a home here on the Horror Podcast, because that's kind of my jam. I dig it.
So. Yeah.
And Michael Wayhunt is, like, a brilliant and, I think, a fascinating writer, and is oftentimes really funny, and that it works so well in horror specifically, because, Like, it's the juxtaposition of the two, I think, just works super well. So, yeah. He's a great dude that I think sometimes heads to the outer dark, which we...
He does, because he... when it's in Atlanta, because he lives down in that way, so...
Yeah, yeah, I was going to say. I'm pretty sure he read last time, too, right?
Yep. Yeah, and that's where this story is set, is Atlanta, so...
Ah, all right. I dig it. So check it out. We'll make sure that we link to it. It's The Dark Magazine, and this particular story is the Pine Arch Collection. And what is the other story that you mentioned again? What was the title?
It's called... it has a long... The full title's long. It's called, like, October Film Haunt Under the House, I think.
Okay.
I always just call it October Film Haunt because I never remember the whole title, but I think it's October Film Haunt Under the House.
Perfect. And we'll put the name of that one in there, and then you can hunt it down in whichever anthology it might show up in. All right. I think it's time, man. It's we paid $4 gazillion. We've got our ticket. It's we're halfway to Halloween, so it's time for us to revisit some of our favorite commercial haunts of our youth, and specifically the movie Haunt that came out last year on Shudder. So here's how it's going to work. We're going to talk a little bit about the movie, but not before we hear what the movie is about and ring the spoiler bell. And then we're going to talk some about the history of commercial haunted houses. And then maybe at the end, we'll talk some about what the movie got right about commercial haunted houses. Maybe some about what they got wrong, or, you know, kind of how those two topics work or don't work well together. So today's essential question is, does the movie Haunt give us insight into the history of commercial haunted houses?
This cannot be ignored.
Yes, we're doing this.
It's the end. Say goodbye.
Is this supposed to be scary?
Want to see my face?
All right. So, the Rotten Tomatoes summary. Do you see how small the summary is?
This one's really small, actually.
Yeah, dude.
Grantham.
And I don't think terrible. So, no. Here's what Rotten Tomatoes writer. We must have got him like early in the day. You know, like. Early on a Monday, where he's just full of energy and, like, ready to get to it. A group of friends look for the thrill of a lifetime when they enter a haunted house that supposedly brings their deepest, darkest fears to life. Things get dangerous, however, when they realize that haunted houses' scares may be more than make-believe.
I'm not sure it actually ever claims to bring anyone's deepest, darkest fears to life. I always see that in the synopsis, but I don't... remember that being a claim that the movie makes at any point.
Yeah, I think they are probably relying on, like, people's deepest, darkest fears all being the same. You know, like, spiders or, you
right,
know,
I was going to say, that they do bring out the one girl's fear of spiders with the real spiders, I guess, but yeah.
Yeah, but I think it's more like, Most people are scared of this thing, so let's go for that. You know?
Everyone's afraid of being tortured to death.
Right. You're like, oh shit, that's scary. Let's go. Yeah. Be like, what is this? It's just a room full of bread. I mean, some people are scared of gluten.
Really afraid of bread. I don't know.
Right. So, what did you think? I think I've seen this one a couple of times now, and it was okay. So, what did you think?
It was fine. Like, it is one of the most middle-of-the-road movies I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I feel like it would be hard to have a strong opinion about it one way or the other.
I think that's totally fair. It does some interesting things, you know?
It does. It looks good. Especially for a movie that's so dark and so dark, as in dimly lit.
Yes.
And so, run down. Everything's really, really run down. But in spite of that, it looks really good all the time.
Yeah, I think it does. You're right. I think visually, lighting-wise, it would be really easy for a film like this to get, muddled or so dappled in the shadows that it would be difficult to pick out anything. But it does some interesting stuff with that. I like our hero just fine, you know?
Yeah, she's all right.
Yeah, she's not obnoxious. Her turn seems perfectly doable.
I love the masks. That was the thing that made me want to see it in the first place, was the design of the mask that they used a lot in the promotional imagery, and I think they're great. I think they're great looking masks. I loved those. That was the one thing about the movie I loved, were those masks. They were great.
Well, and the bad guys are pretty well fucked up, right? I think the idea that when you take the mask off, they're arguably maybe even more fucked up or whatever, you know?
I thought it was interesting that, so I'm going to back up a moment. Have we rang the spoiler bell already?
Yeah. Okay.
I'm going to back up for a moment then. And so we talk a lot on this show about how, all horror is political, right? All art is political, blah, blah, blah.
Sure.
This is one of the closest movies I've ever seen to not being. It feels like a movie that, goes out of its way to not have anything to say.
Okay, yeah.
But the one place where it inadvertently does have something to say is that it's accidentally bigoted toward people who do body modification.
Yeah. I thought the same thing. I was shit.
It's okay. All the body mod people are also just sociopaths in this movie. Okay.
That's a weird
message, movie, but okay.
Right, if you split your tongue, then you're going to ultimately want to murder some people.
The only people who split their tongues are also people who murder people for fun. That makes sense. But I did think it was interesting that they matched their modifications to the masks.
Yes, yeah.
So, when people took the mask off, they looked more or less the same.
Right. and I think that kind of uncanniness works really well for the film.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't say it ever bothered me, that idea, but it definitely it definitely triggered some sort of bell in my mind where I was like, oh shit, man, somebody with a septum piercing must have beaten somebody up
I feel like it wasn't on purpose. I feel like it was just one of those things where it's this is kind of creepy looking,
right?
If we light these guys a certain way, it makes them look spooky. It ties in with a lot of the stuff that goes into Halloween and Extreme Haunted Houses with the makeup and the making mock and all that stuff. The modification is all kind of part of a big continuum of that. And I think they were just let's throw these in and didn't think about the fact that, oh, and we're also making them all serial killers.
Right.
That sends a weird message.
I get it, man. I think on its face, it's not necessarily my thing, but I have lots of good friends that have all kinds of body modification. And it's not my jam, but I think the visceral instinct to people that don't have that done is ooh, I don't like pain. I don't like things going through my body. That's kind of fucked up. And it doesn't matter if it is or it isn't. I think that kind of... that this movie is playing on that kind of visceral reaction to all of that, and be like, ooh,
right.
Yeah. I will tell you a movie that treats body modification a little bit better, or at least a little more nuanced, is American Mary, where, like, there are bad people with body modification, and there is good people with body modification.
Right.
And that they are seen as a, you know, a continuum, as opposed to, you know, crazy Halloween clown serial killers, you know?
Right. And, like even the, like, Dee Snider movie Strangeland from the 90s...
Oh, yeah.
...was, like, more nuanced about it, at least, than this one, which... this is not a message movie. Like, that's the thing about this movie. This movie, again, has several opportunities to have a message, and it's like, no, I'd rather not.
Yeah, right.
So the fact that this is sort of an inadvertent message seems very inadvertent. Like, it's just like, no, these happen to be the bad guys, but when all of your bad guys happen to have body modifications and all of your good guys happen to be pretty normal looking, in quotes, like college students.
Right.
That sets up a disconnect.
Yeah, traditional normies. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah.
I think what the movie does a pretty good job of is establishing that kind of atmosphere, you know, outside of the creepy body modification clowns and all that jazz. It's important probably to note here that the two writers, Brian Woods and Scott Beck, also were responsible for the screenplay for A Quiet Place.
I saw that.
And I think that is an interesting juxtaposition with the two, because, like, A Quiet Place definitely feels like a big, scary monster movie, and this is very much a very quiet, small slasher film, you know? Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah.
So, way different, but I think you can see the connections between the two.
In that I thought both of them were just meh.
Yeah. Yeah. A whole different episode with you telling me that you didn't really like A Quiet Place. It's got big monsters in it.
It does, and they were great. And that's the most frustrating thing about The Quiet Place was that I didn't see it in theaters.
Oh,
because no one told me that the monsters were fantastic and they're great.
Yeah.
The movie is dumb as a rock, but the monsters are fantastic.
Yeah.
And everybody told me the opposite. Everybody was like, oh yeah, the movie's so good, but you hardly ever see the monsters. BS. You see the monsters left, right, and sideways.
Yeah.
And the movie's stupid as anything. Oh my God.
Well, and keep in mind, right? So, like, first off, I really enjoyed The Quiet Place. I really have enjoyed Haunt, but I will also tell you that, as I understand The Quiet Place, like, when it was originally turned in, it was like 13 pages long, you know, like, it was just, there was just nothing there, right? And so they kind of had to go and revamp it and build it out a little bit.
Uh-huh.
And I think maybe what you're finding with Haunt is that absence of subtext.
Right, yeah, like, there's... Like, the weirdest thing about Haunt, right, is you have this moment where it seems like there's going to be subtext. Like, they have this main subplot that seems like it's going to have subtext, and then they just abandon it, which is the abusive ex-boyfriend stalker subplot, which has a million directions it could go, all of which are A, interesting, and B, would add subtext. And he just gets killed functionally off-screen.
Yeah. They punt on him pretty quick, yeah.
And like, she doesn't even know it.
Right. Yeah.
And it's like, what? Why did you even have that subplot? I'm assuming it's to set up her turn at the end, but still, it's like, what? And they, like, really lean into it, because, like, her dad was abusive, too. And that is totally a thing that happens, is that people who were abused as children often get into abusive relationships, and you could have done something with that, but it really doesn't. It's just, it's weird. It brings up a lot of issues, and it's just kind of like, no, we don't want to talk about those. We just brought them up.
Right, yeah. And
that's not necessarily a bad thing. It just means that there's, like, not a lot of meat
on it.
It's a pretty tight little, you know, fun is the wrong word, but taut movie.
Right.
That, you know, it does its thing, and it gets done, and it gets out of the way, and it's fine. You know?
Right. It does not aspire to be anything bigger than it is.
Yeah.
Which is why I think it pairs particularly well with tonight's topic, because we're not looking at the subtext of the film. We're going to basically examine an entirely different topic, and in that context, it only exists to open the door to something much larger than it ever aspires to even discuss. So,
right, and, you know, the things that we're about to discuss are largely free of subtext themselves.
Yeah.
They are just, yeah. You go into a dark room and something jumps out and shouts boo.
Yeah.
They are horror at its most elemental level.
Yeah, I think, and we'll save this maybe for just a minute, but I think being scared by a person in a dark room that jumps out at you is very visceral, right? But yeah. There have been lots of incarnations, like Christian hell houses, that seek to add subtext.
Oh, yeah.
And then things become, at least in my mind, way less cool then, you know?
Oh, like, yeah.
Fucking stupid. So well, anyways, and,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, God. Yeah, no, those things are terrible. And, you know, like, the kinds of people who would put on a hell house, right? I don't want to diss Christians as a whole category, but the kinds of people who are going to put on a hell house, right, are people who have no sense of humor. They are people who have no sense of subtext, honestly.
Yeah.
And so they make, like, the most boring haunted house you could ever possibly imagine.
Yeah, yeah, and have very sincere, like, very earnest actors portraying the right. roles, which, again, sucks all the fucking fun out of
right.
working in one of those haunted houses. But let's save that for a second. The last thing I want to mention about The Haunt before we move on to there, about Haunt, is there were a number of movies that came out in, like, 2016, 17, 18, and 19 that dealt with, like, haunted houses, like commercial
oh, yeah.
haunted houses. So
we had, like, what, there was one called, like, Hell House LLC, right, that had, like, a couple of sequels?
Right, which I think is actually, the original Hell House LLC is really good and fun and uses kind of the clown motif really mm-hmm. well.
So there was that one. There was The House is October Built, which I think got at least one sequel.
Yep. That's an excellent yeah. one. On my list here, I have Hellfest, which has kind of an all-star cast of, Robert Englund maybe in that film. And
sure.
Tony Todd for sure is in that film, so...
I bet they were all in it for like 2 minutes.
Right, because they gotta get a paycheck, man.
Yeah.
Like this. There's one called Bloodfest that I think is similar.
we can just have the end of the word is fest.
Right.
Marathon.
That's good enough, right? But I think this is a popular topic, so I'm glad we are exploring it. So.
Yeah.
All right, so that's what we thought of Haunt. I think to understand what we thought of the movie, we need to take a moment and at least explain the nature of what a commercial haunted house looks like. But before we even get to the history of it, do you have any fond memories? What are your earliest memories of, like, a haunted house put on purely for the amusement of people that walk through it?
Oh, God. I don't know what my earliest ones are. I mean, I went to tons of them when I was a kid, like, as many as I could afford, which was not as many as I wanted to go to. So I would go to, like, the local shitty ones that people put on in their, you know, houses or whatever, but I would also go to the more professional ones, but I never went to, like, the really fancy ones until I moved up here to Kansas City.
Okay.
But, like, I went to some really good, like, I went to a, there was a really good one in, so I lived near Wichita, Kansas, okay. when I was a kid, and I, there was one in Wichita at Watson Park that was on an island, it wasn't inside.
Ooh, cool.
So it was great. So you, like, went to the park and you waited in line, and then, you know, you waited in line for like 17 hours, and then you crossed a bridge, and then the whole haunt was the whole island, and it was almost all outdoors, and it was Ooh. Really friggin' cool.
Yeah.
So I went to it was different every year. They changed it around every year. And I went to that one every year, multiple times a year if I could.
Yeah.
That was really cool.
That idea sounds super neat. I think probably my earliest memory, I can remember being in sixth grade, and all the teachers at the, like, the middle school where I went to
mm-hmm.
Transformed the upstairs gym, which was kind of like the attic, into a haunted house where, like,
nice.
It had like a little maze to it, and they all dressed up, and it was kind of spooky, but not really. But it gave you that sense of, like, jump scare, and, you know,
yeah.
like all the lights were off, and, like, you giggled, and
yeah.
and like you, probably the first real commercial experience I had was the rite of passage that is about 12, 13, 14. We would whoever's parent drew the short straw, right, had to drag all of these adolescents down to the 12th Street Bridge. Here in Kansas City, there are four or five gigantic warehouses that, I mean, they're five or six stories, and it's the entire floor that they have designed into these just massive mazes.
You know? They're incredible.
And go ahead.
Yeah, I didn't get to go to those until I was an adult, because I didn't move up here until I graduated from college. So I went to those when I was like in my 20s. The first time.
Okay.
But they were still amazing. Like, they are amazing. I also went to a bunch in St. Louis that are put on by, I want to say, even the same people, possibly.
Okay, cool.
I drove out there 1 year and went to, like, four.
That's pretty neat. I don't know if I've ever been to one in St. Louis.
Yeah, there's one. The really big one in St. Louis is called The Darkness, but they had, like, three others that year.
Very cool. Well, at least in Kansas City, there are a number, right? There's the Beast, which I would say is probably best known for its, like, bayou. They have, like, a...
Yeah, that forest, that, like, fog-shrouded forest. It's, like, an entire floor of the warehouse.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they have, like, some sort of foam on the ground, so it feels like you're walking, like, on, like, soft, spongy kind of bayou-esque. And there's a bunch of werewolves, which are cool, that are walking around. There's the Edge of Hell, which is like maybe tacitly like an exploration of the seven circles of hell, maybe.
It is best known for its slide.
Yes.
It has like a four or five story slide that's outside of the building.
Yeah. And the slide is like, there's always a lady there to hand you a piece of fucking wax paper or whatever.
Yep.
To make it go faster. But, like, I think if I remember, and it's probably been 5 or 6 years since I've been, like, you make your way all the way up to the top of this warehouse, right? And then at the top of this warehouse is this kind of fucking scary version of heaven where the angels are a little creepy. And
I don't remember. It's been too long. I don't remember, honestly.
Edge of Hell, The Beast.
Those were, like, the original two. And then later they added... Cinema Macabre and the Chambers of Edgar Allan Poe, which I'm not sure the Edgar Allan Poe one's still there.
Yeah, I think Catacombs may still be there too, which is another one that's kind of in the same general vicinity. But
okay,
yeah, but they're awesome.
Cinema Macabre is awesome. It was my favorite.
I don't know if I've ever been to that one.
Oh man, it's so good. If they do it this year, we have to go.
Okay, I'm down.
It's so good. Like you enter it. They've built a fake movie theater.
Ooh, okay.
And there's like movies showing on the screen and everything, and there's a door in the screen, and so you literally walk down and go through the door in the screen, and then from then on you're inside movie.
Ooh.
Each room is like a movie scenario, so it's like a Candyman room, and there's a, you know, it's like Hellraiser rooms, and there's more generic ones, but there's also like a Frankenstein room and shit. It was great.
Oh, I love it. I love that idea.
It was my whole jam.
Yo, I bet. And I think probably makes a pretty good segue into, like, so you have these commercial haunted houses that essentially function for 2 or 3 months out of the year. But my guess is they're never anything other than that. Like, they're essentially just abandoned warehouses, like, 7 months out of the year, you know?
Yeah. I mean, like, these ones, I know, stay up all year. Like, they don't run, but they don't take the stuff out or anything. Most of them... just put them up temporarily. Like, they build them each year. Most of them are not a fixed structure like these are.
Well, and so the kind of opposite of that, right, would be places like Universal Studios or our own Worlds of Fun, where for 6 or 8 weeks out of the year, they convert the park to be, like, they have a myriad of different mazes, and they're scary, and they pump in the fog and the music, and...
Mm-hmm.
We have friends that are scare actors that work at Worlds of Fun, and they were telling me, because Worlds of Fun probably won't open this year, at least not in the summer because of fucking COVID, you know?
Yeah, makes sense.
But they hope to open for Halloween, because even if they only open for Halloween, they'll, like, make money. Like, it's unbelievable. I mean, that makes sense.
It makes total sense, because, like, those Halloween haunts that are only open, like, a couple months a year... those are big business. They make, I mean, I saw somewhere in one of the things we read, like, it's like a several billion dollar business. Like,
yeah.
It's a huge deal. People love them because they're amazing.
Yeah, that, I mean, they really are. They're a ton of fun, and you can totally see, like, the reason why people would run and go to them. Specifically, Universal Studios has, like, they either own the intellectual property for the mm-hmm. movies, or they buy it from, you know, whatever company.
Yeah, or they lease it or whatever, right?
Right, right. But, like, they've done, like, last year they had the Thing maze mm-hmm. that they essentially built in an industrial freezer. So, like, it was just, like, minus 12 degrees the entire time. And
that's
like,
fantastic.
Oh, my God. And it's that kind of fully immersive thing that I think is just very, yeah. very cool.
Oh, so. I would love to go to Halloween Horror Nights, I think is what they call it. I would love to yes. go to that.
Yeah.
That would be so cool.
Yeah, I think next year Signal Horizon is going to put together some sort of excuse to get out that way.
Assuming anything's still open.
Right, right. Assuming people have left their homes. Yeah. So where did all of this come from, I think, is the really interesting story. Because, like, I don't know. I was born in 1980, so essentially...
It's always been here.
Right. Like, this has always been the house that we've been scared of, you know? So we have a really great article here from the Smithsonian Magazine that kind of details the history of where these commercial haunted houses came from. So this is a description of a 1937 party pamphlet, because before we had commercial haunted houses... We had, like, parents that would create haunted houses in their basements, which is really, really rad, and also something my parents would never have fucking done.
Oh, come on. Your parents didn't want to hang raw liver on the walls?
Yeah, yeah. Just listen to this. This is from the actual pamphlet, okay? An outside entrance leads to a rendezvous with ghosts and witches in the cellar or attic. Hang old fur, strips of raw liver on the walls, where one feels his way to dark steps. Weird moans and howls come from dark corners. Damp sponges and hairnets hung from ceilings to touch your face. Doorways are blockaded so that guests must crawl through a long, dark tunnel. At the end, we hear a plaintive meow and see a black cardboard cat outlined in luminous paint. So, yeah.
I feel like that black cat is going to be a real letdown after that raw liver.
Right.
As far as scares go.
I mean, you gotta lead with the sweetbreads, right? If you're gonna go for it, then, you know, you gotta go balls out. You can't put all the good stuff at the beginning.
No, like, I loved that description. Like, it's amazing. I want to share it everywhere. But also, like, I loved the claim that that essentially these happened because people were tired of kids, like, vandalizing shit on Halloween.
Yes,
I was like, okay, we have to get these kids to stop doing stupid things. Let's put them in a dark room and hang liver on the walls.
Yeah, right.
And they'll have a blast.
Well, and I love that the idea of a haunted house really stems from the idea of Halloween, very specific, that it was this date where it was socially acceptable for children to go and make mischief, right? Because that's really the origin of the holiday, and now we've kind of commercialized it and commodified it like we have everything else, so that it becomes just this, you know, way to make more money on costumes and candy and whatever else.
Right.
But, yeah, parents were, like, pulling out their hair, and they were like, look, we gotta let these kids go and have some fun. Who's buying the raw liver this year, you know? Who's doing this shit? Also, though, like, I can remember being around Halloween. There was always shit that was, like, the lighter version of this. Like, grapes that you would peel, or noodles that were cold, you know, or whatever.
Right, yep.
Somebody was trying to spin, so there was always this idea that we needed to make corporeal the things that I don't know, scared kids or whatever.
Yeah, no, it's fun. Like, it's I mean, raw liver nailed to the walls, maybe less fun, but, like, but, you know, like, just the whole idea of, like, being able to touch this stuff and, like, be in it, be a part of it, but be safe
from
it is amazing. Like, it's so. It is, like, I love horror movies, even though I have an anxiety disorder, and haunted houses are just like the horror movie rendered down to its most elemental component. You know, it's you're right there, you're actually experiencing it, but you're still safe, it's still fun. It's great.
Yeah, no, I think you're 100% right. And it's that safe and fun take on things that makes it all really interesting. So the Smithsonian Magazine really makes the argument, these commercial haunted houses got their start in like dark rides with carnivals and essentially what they called ghost houses, which were like, you know, like fun houses that were scary, that had jump scares, that had, you know, kind of fake apparitions everywhere or whatever. But so, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, so I was lucky enough when I was a kid, we had a really shitty, dangerous amusement park near my house, not near my house, in Wichita. It was called Joyland. It's abandoned now. But it had an actual dark ride in it. Like one of the one of the old original, like there was this one designer who designed a ton of them all over the country. And it was one of those. And it was so great. I wrote it like my parents would just drop me off at Joyland, and most of the rides at Joyland were falling apart, and I was afraid to ride them because I'd die. So I'd get one of those bracelets, and I would just ride the Wacky Shack, was what it was called, just over and over again.
Oh, dude, like I am so jealous, because I think that kind of like dark tunnel of love ride is so my jam.
They're so great. It was so great. I mean, and it was like, there's a Simpsons episode where they go on one, and like at one point a coffin opens and a spring just springs out, and there's nothing on the end of it because it's broken off, whatever it was supposed to be. And like that's very much what this one was like, but it was still great.
Yeah, right. It didn't matter if there's anything there. It's just that it exists. Yeah. So the article kind of goes on to talk about kind of the reason why all of the shit went mainstream is because Disney built the Haunted Mansion in like the early 70s or the late 60s. And like in its first week, I don't remember exactly what the number was, but like in the first week, like 600,000 people wrote it or something ridiculous, right? I think it was more like 60,000. But like it blew every other ride out of the water, and people were like, oh my God. So you had...
In a single day, more than 82,000 people.
That is fucking... I mean, that is nuts. Yeah. Also, though, my ass would have been there with bells on, you know?
Oh, yeah. One of the things I want to do before I die is actually go to the Haunted Mansion, because I've never been.
Oh, yeah. Like,
I would love it. Like, it's so my aesthetic. So, I would love it.
Totally your aesthetic, and so full of rich, whimsical, but terrifying detail. And, like... I'm sure a lot of listeners have been there and have been through it, but they have this great illusion at the very end of the ride where you see these like three ghost hitchhikers that like have died in the house or something, but you've been introduced to them earlier in the ride. And then there is this wonderful illusion where you look to the left and they are mirrors. So you see yourself and your family in your ride vehicle. But they have superimposed one of the ghostly hitchhikers that is, like, in your vehicle that will ride home with you. You know, that, like, and I think the voiceover is, like, the people you meet in the Haunted Mansion will stay with you forever. You know, it's so fucking great. You know, it's so good. So.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yes, yes. And so it's probably important to also note that Disney has jumped on the kind of universal, you know, horror train as well. So they have the not so scary Halloween parties that, you know, are less about celebrating the horror and more about celebrating the kind of childish whimsy that comes along with the time. So before we get into the last kind of subtopic, I want to mention one of my favorite things on the face of the planet is something called Secret Cinema, which is purely a London-based thing. But they do something very similar to what we have talked about. It's not necessarily just horror, but they take a movie and then recreate the movie set and then hire literally hundreds of extras to play people in the movie, and you buy a ticket for it, and they give you an identity as an extra to play as one of the characters. So you you go and experience the movie, right? So you are a member of the Nostromo crew or whatever they did, right? When oh shit, what's the latest one that came out? It's you know, guy that gave Prometheus, right? When the newest movie came out, they turned like a city block into an alien planet, and they've turned a factory into the Moulin Rouge, and another factory into the Shawshank prison, and they just do fucking really rad shit. So
that's really cool. Yes. I've never heard of that actually. So
yeah, one of these days that's on my bucket list, is fly my ass out to London and check it out.
So go ahead. No, are we about to switch topics?
Okay. No, keep going.
Okay, well, because so I've never been to the Haunted Mansion, as I mentioned, but one of the cool things about it, like, as a haunted attraction, is that it uses a bunch of, like, it uses this wild combination of, like, stuff that was cutting edge at the time it was built, right? So, like, this technology that was brand new when it was built, and some of the oldest tricks that have ever been used. So, like, that hitchhiker trick that you mentioned is essentially a variation on the Pepper's Ghost thing, which is, you know, one of the oldest, like, magicians used to use it in stage magic, like, before the turn of the century. It goes back to the 1800s. And so, like, the Haunted Mansion is this really great sort of fulcrum of both, like, what was at the time the most advanced forms of making a haunted house and the, like, earliest forms of it.
Yeah, I could see that.
Which is really fascinating, just kind of as a, I don't know, as a thing that exists.
Yeah, and I think highlights why those things still work now is those early effects are so much. We were dogging on CGI earlier, but like they hold up so much better, you know? Yeah. Like they just look great. There is a... Right. I forget, I'm sure one of our viewers will know, but there is a seance scene at the Haunted Mansion where you're seeing a table where they're doing a seance and shit is floating, right? And I know it's an illusion, and I'm probably sure they fucking do it with strings or whatever, but it's lit in such a specific way and it looks so fucking fantastic that it's just so much fun, you know, because it looks great, you know, and it's not like computer generated. There is actually a candlestick that is flying in the middle. You know, like I know that it's not really doing that, but goddamn, it sure looks like it. And it's 3 feet from your face, you know?
I mean, and it's real, even if it's not like, if it's not really doing what you think it's doing, it's real somewhere. It's physical. You could touch it.
Yeah.
Like, even the Pepper's Ghost thing is a real thing. It's just being reflected so that it looks translucent.
Right.
Exactly. I mean, but somewhere there's a real person dressed up, you know, or whatever, or an animatronic, or whatever it is that's being reflected. Like, there's a real physical thing you could touch.
Yeah.
So
as much whimsy and kind of safe horror as that provides, Haunt is really aping this new evolution of horror haunts that label themselves as extreme haunts. There's an interesting article from Ranker that is essentially just the most extreme scary haunted house attractions, and I think it's interesting and pairs really nicely with a documentary on Shudder right now called The Art of the Scare, which is essentially just about extreme haunted houses.
I haven't actually watched it yet, but
the documentary is really interesting and highlights a couple that I want to spend just a tiny bit of time talking about. One is called McKinney Manor. Yeah. Oh, that's it. And the other house is called Blackout. And whereas the traditional rules of horror movies and kind of traditional haunted houses are like, don't touch the screamsters, they won't touch you, you know, keep moving forward. Everything is linear. You'll make it out, you know, yada, yada, yada. There are a bunch of chicken exits that you can use at any point in time. Like, none of those rules apply. and, like, not only do they touch you, but it's about, like, actual torture, you know? At least.
Yeah, like, they won't hurt you physically, usually. But, like, yeah, they'll, like, douse you with cold water and, like, berate you.
Yeah.
And well, it seems horrible. And you're, like, in a straitjacket the entire time.
Yeah.
At least at McKinney. Like, they bind you so you can't move.
Yeah. And with that house, too, they, like, they will put you in a tank of water. And there's also
right.
a cage, so there's not a ton of room to breathe out of. And
it seems horrible.
Like, yeah, yeah, right. I watched that special in kind of preparation for this episode, and my wife was, you know, grading papers or whatever, sitting on the couch next to me. And it's one of the few times where she's looked up and said something about a horror movie, and I'm like, yes, I agree completely. She was like, why would people pay good money to do something like this? And I was like, you're right. You know, like, the owner of that particular haunted house was like telling his screamsters, he's like, if they throw up, then you scoop it up and you put it back in their mouth. I'm like, God, I don't even know if that's legal. That sounds hideous and terrible.
Apparently you have to sign a really complicated waiver and shit before you go into McKinney. I know, like, Eli got briefly really, like, fascinated by McKinney Manor and, like, had me watch a bunch of videos of them doing stuff to people in it and things that people had taken, and it seemed horrible. But yeah, no, apparently you go through, like, a really elaborate screening process and everything before they let you in.
Yeah, man, I don't
know. So
that
you don't just have a heart attack on them or something.
Right. And I'm sure some of that is part of the spectacle, you know? Like, the longer this waiver can be and the more fucked up shit that we can list on this waiver, the more scared you're going to be.
Right.
But yeah, like, at least in Blackout 2, is there's this really heavy element of, like, sexual assault, right? Like, yep. There are a whole bunch of naked people, and then...
Oh, I remember that one.
Yeah. And, like, one of the early ones, somebody has a glove on their hand, and they stick their fingers all in your mouth, right? And it's like, that sounds awful, you know? Like, not fun, not like...
Yeah.
Not challenging in any kind of way that I want to be challenged.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's the modern equivalent of, like, trying to watch those, like, Faces of Death videos or something, right? Like, it's how much can you take, you know? It's
I think, and
I don't want
Don't
want to know. Not tons. I know how much I can take. Not tons.
Right. I know how much I voluntarily can take, and that's not tons at all. So that's the world I live in, and I'm happy to live in it. One of these articles that we read in preparation linked the idea of an extreme haunt to, like, kind of extreme horror movies that we might call torture porn. I don't necessarily love that label generally, but I think it probably lends itself pretty well to this type of house, in that they both are like, let's push these boundaries as much as we humanly can. You know?
Right. Let us make this an experience that is hard to sit through.
Yeah, right. Right. And
intentionally so. Exactly. And, you know, I mean, and that has its value, I suppose, as art, but it's not art I care about. So.
Yeah. So now would be the time for you guys to join us in the Horror Podcast study group and tell us what your experience has been at haunted houses in general. If you've experienced one of these extreme haunted houses, I would love for you to come there on Facebook and share whatever your experience is, because maybe we got it wrong. Like, it's not my bad.
And I never will, 100%. So I'll have to rely on your experiences.
Yeah.
I am never going to experience an extreme haunted house.
Yeah. I could lie to you and tell if, like, you do a good enough job explaining why these places are worthy that I'll go to. But I won't.
No. Like, I like I said earlier, I have an anxiety disorder, and horror and haunted houses don't trigger it, but that would.
Yeah.
So I'm good.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't, like, I suffer a little bit from anxiety, but Jesus Christ, I think being locked in a, like, one of the things.
I mean, I think that would trigger most people. Like, I mean, I think that's the point.
But... Yeah, right, right. Like, there is a scene in the documentary where they have hollowed out a couch, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, somebody's walking through a room, and somebody pops up from, like, the cushions of the couch. So there's, like, nothing in the bottom of the couch, and the cushions are mm-hmm. covering it. And the person pops up and grabs somebody and then, like, lays back down in the hollow of the couch. And, like, there's some sort of trapdoor or something that initially is latched that then becomes unlatched so that they can get out kind of the slide in the bottom that, like, goes mm-hmm. to the basement. It is fucking awful. It's like laying in a coffin for, like, I don't know, even 30 seconds while somebody prevents you from moving. That, yeah. Oh my God. No, thank you.
Yeah. None. Yeah, no, it doesn't seem fun.
No, not at all.
One thing, before we wrap this up, one thing to kind of bring it back to Haunt, actually, the movie, was that one of the interesting things that Haunt almost talked about, but again, decided at the last minute didn't want to, was the sort of, like, unspoken contract that you enter into when you go into haunted houses normally, where, like, you're going to go along with this. Like, all this scary stuff's going to happen, and you're going to be okay with it. You're not going to punch these people.
Right, yeah.
You're not going to prevent this from happening. When someone jumps out and pretends to assault you, you're not going to assault them back.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to go along with it. There's this sort of unspoken contract that you have, that they're not going to hurt you, and you're not going to hurt them.
Yeah, well, and you're never going to flip the script, right? The important part there is, they're going to play the role as the person that scares you, and you're going to fulfill the role as the person being scared, right?
Like, right, yeah.
So you're going to scream and fall and cower and, you know, whatever.
Yeah, and, like, at times, Haunt, like, brushes up against this kind of, like, when they're watching one of the people get tortured or something, it's like, is this part of the show? Do we pretend to be scared, or should we really be scared?
Yeah.
Like, what? How do we react? What is the script? We no longer know the script.
And those
are the moments where it's, like, almost about something, and then it's like, nah.
Yeah. But I think that kind of discomfort is really interesting to explore, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, very good. Well, we have run out of time, so we're going to have to reserve our anonymous Amazon user who do not necessarily love this film for another time and day. But note, there are people that did not care for this movie very much.
What?
But, you know, hey, it is what it is. It's 73% on Rotten Tomatoes, so, like, lots of people enjoyed it, for sure.
Yeah.
So, all right. Oren, where can they find more of your stuff?
You can find more of my stuff on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I am Oren Gray, or at orengray.com.
Awesome. You can find me at Signal Horizon, running our digital media, and at Ty Unsel on Twitter. And I'm the one that mans the Horror Podcast study group on Facebook. So check me out there. Oren, I'm super jazzed about next week's episode. Tell them what we're going to talk about.
We are going to talk about cursed films and films about cursed films, or fictional cursed films, maybe, depending. Antrim and Fury of the Demon.
Yeah, dude. Fury of the Demon is great. Both of those films are available on Amazon Prime. And I think it's going to be a ton of fun. So make sure you check those out as your homework. And until then, class dismissed.